Freunde des gepflegten Korbballsports, herzlich willkommen zur neuen Ausgabe unseres Korbiger-Podcasts. Schön, dass ihr wieder dabei seid. Eventuell werdet ihr euch wundern. Wir hatten ja eigentlich gestern unsere ganz normale Folge schon online, ganz traditionell mittwochs. Jetzt kommen wir heute schon wieder. Das liegt daran, dass wir uns dachten, dass man so ein neues Design am besten feiert mit einer Extra-Episode. Und meine Idee war dann wiederum, dass das am besten funktioniert mit einem intensiven Gespräch über unsere allseits beliebten Buletten aus Chicago. Ich glaube, Oles Bedürfnis, über die Bulls zu sprechen, ist erschöpft. Deshalb habe ich mir Verstärkung geholt aus Chicago. Matt Peck ist wieder dabei. Ihr kennt ihn vielleicht noch von letztem Jahr. Da war er während des Sommers schon mal dabei. Wir haben da die große Offseason besprochen, haben so ein bisschen die Rolle der Bulls in Chicago eingeordnet, beziehungsweise er hat so ein bisschen berichtet, von vor Ort sozusagen. Und jetzt kommt er wieder. Wir blicken ein bisschen zurück auf letzte Saison, geben einen kleinen Ausblick, sprechen über den Sommer, über Zach LaVine, über mögliche Lonzo-Backups. Und ja, ich finde, es ist ein ganz interessantes Gespräch bei rumgekommen. Matt war letztes Jahr noch bei Locked On Bulls, jetzt ist er bei CHGO, ein Medienunternehmen aus Chicago, das alle Chicago-Sportsteams behandelt. Und Matt widmet sich natürlich dem Bulls. Schaut da gerne mal rein, hat einen Podcast, täglich fast, mit zwei Kollegen, Will Gottlieb und Big Dave Watson. Sehr interessant, mir macht es immer Spaß zuzuhören. Also hört da mal rein, natürlich aber erst, nachdem ihr hier reingehört habt. Also jetzt würde ich sagen, beziehungsweise, bevor wir starten, natürlich noch ein kleiner Disclaimer. Wir haben die ganze Geschichte aus terminlichen Gründen schon am Dienstag aufgenommen. Das heißt, das erste Preseason-Game, die Dale & Terry Show, war noch kein Thema. Außerdem wussten wir natürlich noch nicht final, dass Ayo starten würde. Wir haben uns ein bisschen ausgetauscht, wen wir bevorzugen würden, Caruso, Ayo, ob wir jemanden bevorzugen würden. Bleibt meiner Meinung nach aber auch so stehen, ist ja trotzdem ein interessantes Thema. Natürlich sei auch noch gesagt, dass die Unterhaltung auf Englisch stattfindet. Matt kommt ja aus Chicago, von daher diesmal auf Englisch mal wieder. Ja, und jetzt würde ich sagen, viel Spaß mit der neuen Episode und Matt Peck. And there he is, Matt Peck. Welcome to the show, or shall I say welcome back. You've been here last year.
Yeah, it feels like a lifetime. How are you, Max?
I'm good, thank you. How are you? It really does feel like a lifetime. Some things have happened.
Yeah, and lots of things in the world of Bulls basketball. I mean, this team from the end of the 2021 season to the end of the 21-22 season just feels like a completely different universe.
It does. And we were speculating last year about all the additions and what they might bring to the table and how it might work. So we got a bit of an idea last year, didn't we?
Yeah, and I think for the most part, at least out of the gate, people were pleasantly surprised. I was certainly pleasantly surprised. I was excited about all the moves they made, bringing in Lonzo, bringing in DeMar, you know, stealing Caruso away from the Lakers. It was obviously an improvement of talent on paper, and it was just a question of whether or not they could make all those pieces work together. And by and large, through the first half, arguably the first two-thirds of the season, they worked very well together. Especially with the ascension of Zach LaVine continuing to improve upon his all-star status in the league, and DeMar DeRozan telling all of the haters and all of the doubters, hey, I'm still an elite bucket getter in this league. And especially if it comes to a close game late in the fourth quarter, give me the rock and I'm going to go win us the game. It was a lot of fun to watch, especially early on.
You're going to take that one-legged three-pointer pull-up against the Pacers and stuff like that. Yeah, it's been exciting. The first like 3 months of the season, 3-4 months of the season, it was just like, I mean, everybody, it was such an exciting brand of basketball to watch. And I remember you telling me last year that that the city of Chicago is just a bit different when the Bulls are good. So when the Bulls are exciting, that everybody kind of feels it. And so how was it in the city? Like when that they didn't only win the games, but like in an like exciting and very watchable fashion.
I mean, it is truly different, and it was so great to remember what that felt like. Not only just like the vibe and electricity around the city, you see more people rocking their Bulls gear out on the streets, and people were excited to talk about the team, even if you were just a stranger saying hello to another stranger in a bar, and they were rocking a Bulls jersey or a Bulls hat or a Bulls coat, and you're like, yeah, how about this team, huh? And then especially being in the stadium, you know, I've been to countless Bulls games in the United Center from my childhood through my adult years. And I remember what it was like back in the, you know, the late 90s, the second half of the dynasty, where that building was just the loudest place, you know, on the planet. And then even you got some of that in the Derrick Rose years where, you know, you had a league MVP, you had deep playoff runs, and then that just went away. For like five straight seasons after the Jimmy Butler trade, the Bulls were bad. And even most often during the rebuilding years immediately post dynasty, even with a bad team, the United Center was still full every night. Like, the Bulls have been leading the league in attendance, home game attendance, for decades, spanning back to the dynasty. And for the first time in my lifetime, at least, you started to see towards the back end of that failed Jimmy Butler trade rebuild, the United Center was emptying out. Fans had it. Mm. They were sick of watching the garbage product on the floor. And so, like, towards the tail end of the Jim Boylan era, you know, glad he's gone. Then as they make this big change, they bring in a new front office. The new front office starts overhauling the roster. COVID shuts down the world and shuts down stadiums to fans. So this past season, being able to be in the United Center again post-pandemic, or at least with, you know, loosened rules towards the tail end of the severity of the pandemic, and having a team that was worth watching again, it was like Bulls fans coming out of hibernation, where we were all just hiding in our own dim, dark holes for the tail end of that failed rebuild. And it felt really, really good to be back in a loud United Center again.
Yeah, I can only imagine, because I felt it, like I saw it from afar. Like, I tried to watch the game. Well, I watched some games, or the most games I could, even during those boiling years, because I was interested, you know. But
bless then, your heart.
So yeah, bless real life, especially. But getting up at night was hard during that time. But I could like feel it, that the energy in the building was different. And so what, apart from winning, obviously, but what would you attribute it to? Like the brand of basketball, having someone like DeMar DeRozan, who seems like a really nice dude and an exceptional basketball player, obviously, or like with Lonzo, like the quick transition, tough defense, Caruso, what was it for you that made it even more special?
Right. Well, I guess the first thing I would say is shout out to my guy Stacey King, because he quickly branded that team last year Shy Slamma Jamma. A Chicago take on the old Fi Slamma Jamma from that great Houston collegiate team back in the day, because it was like these incredible fast breaks where you have Lonzo displaying his beautiful court vision after he or somebody comes up with a steal, and then you got either LaVine or somebody else tearing down the court. And Levine's above the rim finishes, people throwing alley-oops to each other. And then between those moments, which of course you're not going to get an entire game's worth of those kind of moments, but the offensive beauty and precision of DeMar DeRozan was just something that I had never truly paid that close attention to. Whether it was his first long stint in Toronto, or then going to the Spurs in that trade, like, I always knew that DeMar DeRozan was a quality scorer and a bucket getter pretty much anywhere on the floor, other than everyone always has known he's not much of a three-point shooter. But watching his footwork and watching him use his footwork to get to his spots on the floor where he knows if I shoot from exactly this spot, you know, and a lot of the time it was one or one and a half steps just to the left of the free throw line, right? That's where he loved to get that little mid-range shot off. I mean, it's like watching poetry in motion, watching DeMar DeRozan operate in a half-court offense and get to his spots on the floor, and then just some of the toughest shot making. And coupled with that, continuing to see Zach LaVine ascend and not only use his athleticism, getting to the rack, finishing through contact better, getting to the free throw line, but the improvement of that lethal step back three-pointer he has, and becoming one of the most lethal catch and shoot threats in the league when Zach was playing off the ball at times. So many things about that Bulls offense were just so much fun to watch.
I think DeMar was the one who surprised me the most, as you said, because I knew who it was, but the patience with which he plays, you know, getting to his spots and then not rushing it, but one pump fake, two, three, four, five, 10, I don't know. But you know what I mean? So it was so great to watch. And so, and then it went downhill, obviously. And it was like a slow descent. Like, it started, like, COVID hit around Christmas for the first time, and then the injuries came in.
Right.
Caruso, Alonso.
They managed to stay afloat when it was one guy down, or maybe one key guy and one deeper bench guy. And then when they all started to pile up together and Pat hadn't come back yet. Lonzo was out. Yep. Caruso was out. And then at times on top of that, you know, Derek Jones Jr. was out or Javonte was out, whoever it was. Plus Zach LaVine being noticeably hampered by that knee while those injuries were simultaneously mounting up. And so they were trying to deal with losing this key guy and losing this key guy. And then also seeing Zach LaVine's efficiency and health go from 100% through the first half of the season down to like 60 or 70%. And the difference between 60 or 70% Zach LaVine and 100% Zach LaVine is striking and noticeable when you see it play out in the span of like a couple of months.
Yeah, I think that's something that really gets overlooked when we talk about the Bulls like in an outlook for this season now, because it's only like, okay, they haven't really had this big signings over the summer. They haven't really changed up their team. They were 1-14 against the top teams in the East. But it's all they are. LaVine, he was a bit hampered, but he played, blah, blah, blah. It's not like, but he was like, I mean, you could tell that that knee bothered him. Mm-hmm. And like, and that there was, it was a clear, like, it was like a cut from, I think it was Golden State when it happened for the first time. He had to leave the game early.
Yeah.
And then there was a cut, like, where he really, not only offensively, but also defensively, he played, like, worse, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that gets overlooked when we talk about the upcoming season. Now, I mean, I don't know. Like he says, he's like 100% now. He's had the surgery over the summer, so maybe what he's been, and he's been a guy who's been improving all over his career. Basically, I think he's added something to his game every year. So what would you expect from him now that he's healthy? For now, and hopefully the most of the season.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you're right to point out the fact that that can be overlooked. On top of a lot of fans overlooking the fact that Zach was an unrestricted free agent, and a lot of unrestricted free agents in the NBA leave wherever they are. They'll leave. Yes, the Bulls offered him the most money because they could, and because I think he finally made the playoffs for the first time in his career, he finally has more help with DeMar and Vooch and this supporting cast. He felt good about signing that max extension with the Bulls and staying here. But Bulls fans overlooked that because it wasn't a new name. It was just keeping a guy you already had. But to me, that is the, you know, how far does the pendulum swing and the factors within that? A big one is, do we have 100% Zach LaVine out of the gate? Yep. And can we see a fully healthy Zach LaVine for most of the season? Because when he was, bless his heart, playing through that knee injury at the back end of last year, because he knew that they were fighting for playoff seeding, he wanted to go to the playoffs for the first time in his career. And yeah, he was playing on a contract year. It like reduced the Bulls offense to DeMar, please. Please, DeMar, because they didn't have their 3-point shooting threat with Lonzo being out. DJJ and Javonte, occasional, you know, corner three hitting role player, they went ice cold. And Zach saw his, you know, efficacy come down a little bit, his field goal percentage come down a little bit playing through that bad knee. So if they get healthy Zach out of the gate, it's a big swing in their favor. And if it's paired with a DeMar who is at least close to as lethal as he was offensively last season, then even with the absence of Lonzo Ball, I still think they can get off to a good start. But everything I'm hearing, I'm cautiously optimistic that Zach LaVine has said, hey, it's a simple procedure. I waited to have it in the offseason because I really wanted to play in the playoffs. And from what I've seen from these training camp practices and what my guy Will Gottlieb, our journalist and reporter at CHGO has relayed to us, Zach looks good. And it's funny, like their incoming rookie, Dalen Terry, when he was asked, you know, what stood out to you after his first training camp practice, his answer was, Zach LaVine is really fast. So I'm hoping that's a good sign that we get back to normal Zach. And back to normal Zach before the knee last season, he was neck and neck with DeMar DeRozan as far as their scoring efficiency, their shooting efficiency, and was a bona fide all-star who was flirting with maybe third-team All-NBA before that knee injury. So if Zach LaVine is indeed fully healthy and ready to go, it's a huge boost for the Bulls that I think a lot of people are overlooking.
To me, the thing with LaVine is sometimes, I mean, he, like, the GM survey just came out today. Mm-hmm. And so where he wasn't even mentioned about among the best shooting guards in the league.
Yeah, I thought that was fairly disrespectful.
I thought so too. And I mean, I catch myself sometimes thinking, okay, yeah, he's been in Chicago. But in Chicago for
I like that you, that's years. Your frame of mind though. That's good.
Yeah. I'm almost saying us. No, I'm not. But no, he's been in Chicago for I don't know, like a few years now, and they haven't really won. And like he's been like this empty carry guy before. Like he's been labeled that, whether that's true or fair or whatever. And mm-hmm. I catch myself sometimes. Yeah, is he that good? Is he that good? But I mean, when you see him, things come so easily to him. And I don't know whether you've heard the. Old Man and the Three, JJ Redick podcast with DeMar DeRozan, where he says like everything seems to be so easy with Zach. And I don't get why people, I mean, do I not see it? Or why are people so hesitant to like welcoming him to the top players in the league?
Yeah, do you have an explanation? I mean, it's a good question. I mean, I guess you could hypothesize that, as you said, he had this notion as just, oh, well, really athletic, you know, former dunk champion who's never played on a good team every year of his career until last year. And then last year, the Bulls finally get good, but most people give most of the credit to DeMar DeRozan. Yep. And it's, you know, and it's silly and frustrating because a lot of the people who had been slandering Zach LaVine and saying he might be athletic and he might be, you know, this crazy slasher who's turned himself into a pretty decent, you know, 3-point threat, but he's not a winner. They were the same one saying, oh, DeMar DeRozan, awful signing, awful offseason signing. He's not going to help the Bulls win. He's over the hill, whatever, whatever. Yeah. And then that same group of people who didn't want to give Zach LaVine credit for being a second consecutive year all-star caliber player were like, oh, well, it's not Zach LaVine. It's because they got DeMar DeRozan now. And to those people, you want to say, well, like, well, make up your freaking mind. Because the answer, the correct answer is they're both really good. And Zach LaVine finally had some help, some all-star caliber help for the first time in his career. So both of those things can be true. I don't know why most people still refuse to recognize that talent of Zach LaVine. I think it's slowly shifting. Obviously, he's become more of a big name and face in the NBA since joining Clutch Sports. You know, that agency is all about turning their clients into stars. And he just, like, a few days ago released a new New Balance commercial where he's playing with, like, Kawhi Leonard and a bunch of other NBA All-Stars. So his name and his face are getting bigger. The fact that some people still drag their feet when they say, okay, well, so who are the best five shooting guards in the NBA right now and refuse to even mention Zach LaVine in that conversation? They're either stubborn or they don't know what they're looking at.
It's weird. And is it maybe because, like, earlier, like, the holes in his game were a bit more obvious than with other players, that, like, his defense, like, was really bad at times, most of the time. And he was, like, his decision-making wasn't perfect. So he like, tended to, like, get his head down, especially when games got close, or, like, his passing wasn't perfect. So is that something that, like, stood out to many people more than what he could do on the court?
It could be. And that, you know, that's the lazy person's knock on Zach LaVine, is either saying, well, he doesn't play defense, or I've always admitted that there is fair and truthful criticism to that element of his game offensively, which you just mentioned, which is especially when he was asked to be the guy for almost every possession down the stretch of a close game and didn't have a whole lot of help. He was trying to force things and he was trying to make a play. And his handles have never been that elite level as a ball handling guard, to where it resulted in a fair amount of turnovers, or some people would critique him and knock him for his shot selection late in games, where it's like, okay, well, yeah, maybe that was a tough shot that Zach just took, but look around and look at the teammates and look at the names on the back of the other Bulls jerseys on the floor. Who the hell else is supposed to take that shot? So yeah, I can oftentimes see why those knocks, whether it be the defense or his offensive execution, were around, and why people would point to them, because they were, I guess, the most valid criticisms if you wanted to start listing criticisms of Zach LaVine's game. But the fact that for whatever reason people seem to be so obsessed with those, when plenty of other elite scorers in the league who also don't play much defense just sort of automatically get a pass for that. Most NBA players who are Zach's level of skill or better offensively, who also have defensive deficiencies, you know, people mention it and then immediately dismiss it. With Zach, yeah, it's like, no, his defense is terrible. You need to be a two-way player. It's like, okay, yeah. Zach's defense,
look at the rotation
always,
he missed.
Right, Zach's defense has always left something to be desired, but it's not like egregiously worse than any of the NBA players who are like, I'm 90% offense and 10% defense, and nobody talks about those players that way.
And I mean, he has improved over the years, especially yes, one-on-one absolutely. Defense. So he's, and that's the thing that I never really got about him. He's not like this, yeah, I'm going to do my thing. I don't care. I don't work. He's like, he's pretty quiet but he's like perfecting his craft. Like he's been working on his game his entire career. So he's not an unlikable guy, if you want to say, in my opinion, you know, and someone who's like, okay, you need to work harder. He's just too lazy or whatever.
Some people also would point out, and I'm one of them, that DeMar DeRozan, also not a great defensive player, never has been. Yeah. And some people would say, well, yeah, but DeMar brings you more offensively than Zach does, so it's okay for DeMar to be a net negative defensive player. And you're like, actually, no, through the first half of last season, before Zach got hurt, they were the same level of positive, you know, offensive player. And so it's because that the Bulls' two best players are heavily talented offensively and a little bit weak defensively. So people want to point out that criticism and say, well, you got one of these guys has to be better defensively. And look, is it flawed roster construction? I guess you could say that, but that's why the front office went out and signed Alex Caruso and Lonzo Ball, two of the best perimeter defenders in the league, to make up for the weaknesses of their two best players. Like all of that is logical. You can see the reasoning behind it. And the Bulls, for the first couple months of the season, when those guys were out there and healthy and playing, had a top 10 defense in addition to a top 10 offense, largely because of those two players. Those two players go down and the Bulls defense falls off a cliff. It's not surprising.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, because everybody asked whether that was sustainable, that kind of defensive style, because it was like very, as you said, very aggressive and stuff. And yet you never found out. And I guess often it's just like, yeah, okay, it wasn't sustainable because we didn't see it in the second half of the season, you know. But yeah, I mean, Caruso was in and out. And due to some guys don't know what to do with their extremities when another guy's airborne. I think as a fan, it's hard because I feel like the people have been overly critical with the Bulls and now it's even like it's the same. It feels the same. But so you've mentioned the like two offenses we've seen last year, like the like first half of the season to All-Star break, and then second half where it was okay, DeMar, please save us, and he did. Very often. And so that's something I also figured. And I think the elephant in the room is Lonzo, who obviously was out basically since the new year. And but is it only Lonzo in your opinion? Or because I felt like it was like the two top guys, the two top playmakers, basically, with Lonzo and Caruso being out at the same time. As we said, LaVine getting injured, not being 100%. So it was like last man standing, basically, with DeRozan. So he was the best option. I just remember that MLK Day game against the Grizzlies, because that was on a great time here in Germany. I was so looking forward to it. And then it was just like, okay, I mean, yeah, no chance. You know, it was just like really nobody there. A lot of Matt Thomas and stuff, you know. So one of your favorite guys, right?
That name makes me flinch.
That's why I needed to bring up that name. So that was really important to me. So, but what do you think? How do you think will that, like, when we talk about this season now, without Lonzo, do you think we can get, or the Bulls can get back to that kind of like more free flowing offense that I've been also talking about, like Billy Donovan has over the past few days? They want a more motion, more like less predictable. Right.
I mean, it's good that Billy is talking about wanting to accomplish that, you know, in injecting a bit more randomness into this Bulls offense, a bit more off ball movement from certain guys to create better ball movement. And you need that. We saw what a stagnant four guys standing around and watching DeMar try to go to work or beat a double team. And then even when DeMar would pass out of a double team, nobody could hit a shot, even if they were open. The Lonzo thing is really frustrating because, I mean, it became very apparent what he did, especially once he was off the floor, not doing it anymore. Mm-hmm. Because his elite defense and ball hawk skills is what created a lot of the Bulls' easy buckets in transition last season, coupled with his brilliant court vision. So his great defense and his great court vision, Lonzo and the Bulls' transition offense and fast break offense gave them like 8 to 12 points a game last season when Lonzo was out there. And they won a lot of games, but they didn't like blow teams out all that often. They won a lot of close games. You take that 8 to 12 fast break points a game away that you don't have because Lonzo Ball's not there generating steals and orchestrating fast break opportunities, all of a sudden your margin of victory is much, much smaller. And he was their highest volume three-point shooting threat alongside Zach LaVine last season. He was shooting at, I think, like a 41.5% clip behind the arc at 6.5, 7 attempts a game. And the Bulls, with their efficiency in the first half of the season, especially from other role players who could knock down the occasional open shots, Javante, Derek Jones Jr., Caruso, whoever it was, they were able to stay alive and offensively stay in games just barely because their two all-star scorers, Zach LaVine and DeMar DeRozan, whether it be mid-range for DeMar or Zach scoring at all three levels, were so efficient. But your role players stop making their open threes. You lose Lonzo's lethal three-point shooting volume, and coupled with you're not getting the same fast break opportunities on a nightly basis, the Bulls' offense was reduced to nothing other than DeMar, please save us. So it will be hard to not have those elements of Lonzo's game for the first 3 months at least of this season. What I'm hoping, and I'm not convinced, but what I'm hoping is that knowing that they will be without Lonzo sets them up with a greater chance to succeed without him than trying to adjust midseason to not having him. It still won't be easy, but at least now they know that they have to make a different plan or plans to get this offense easier looks without him, without his fast break opportunities, and without his three-point shooting. But I think it's absolutely fair to be skeptical about where that comes from, how they can orchestrate more ball movement in certain possessions around when DeMar is being that guy or Zach is being that guy. I am very curious to see what the Bulls offense looks like through the first, 10 or 15 games or so of this season. Because I honestly don't know what it will look like now. My hope is that it looks more like what we saw in the first half of last season compared to the last half of last season. But the one thing that you can absolutely be frustrated by if you're a fan of this team, or one thing you can point out if you're someone who analyzes NBA hoops, as far as the Bulls' underwhelming offseason, they did not address that lack of three-point shooting from last season's roster. Where is that shooting coming from? The only thing is hoping that guys shoot at a better clip than they did last season, whether it be Vooch, who shot, 31% behind the arc last season, getting somewhere closer to the mid or upper 30s. Javante, Derek Jones Jr., Alex Caruso, he also was ice cold from three when he came back from that wrist injury at the end of last season. So when it comes to the ball movement and when it comes to the three-point shooting, I will be sitting on the edge of my seat waiting to see what it looks like, but I'm not super optimistic coming into the season with regard to those two things.
Trust is required in those who are already there. And I mean, as you say, that growth needs to come from within, as they haven't haven't signed too many players who can or will help in that respect. And I mean, Caruso, I think I tried to stay on the positive side last year to say, okay, he's hurt his wrist. So that like makes it hard for him to shoot. So he might feel uncomfortable shooting the ball, or still like it doesn't feel natural maybe still. So I hope over the summer, like he's gotten that feeling back. And so, yeah, I mean, to me, the two players I look at the most And I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. So it's not rocket science that I'm doing here. Pat Williams and Ayo. Because those, I mean, as a young player, there's always like the most room to grow, probably. And so Ayo is even more in the focus because like you guys have all also been talking about it, whether he be starting even in right. Lonzo's place until he comes back. And so what makes me optimistic about Ayo's development is not, it's like obviously what we hear about him, but like the spark and the jump he has made last year from summer league, from his first summer league game, where he looked to me like really overwhelmed, mm-hmm. to actually being a really good rotation player within a few months. And so maybe in the end he hit a bit of the rookie wall, but so I feel, how do you feel, like, first of all, are you start Ayo camp or are you start Caruso camp? And how do you feel about, I mean, Ayo's shot is like, he's got like a bit of a unique shot. Do you feel like there is mm-hmm. that room to grow so that he can provide that spacing and the ball movement as well? Because like that's, I think, two things you need from Lonzo's backup.
Right. I mean, I don't have a very, very strong opinion one way or the other if you're talking about who's going to be this team's starting point guard in Lonzo's absence. Because you know that there are going to be plenty of possessions where Zach's bringing the ball up, plenty of possessions where DeMar's bringing the ball up, orchestrating the, you know, whatever offensive set they're running. So it's not like this big, giant, you know, storm cloud of, oh God, we got to make the right decision for our starting point guard, because whoever is their starting point guard is basically just going to do what they do best on the floor to complement the other four guys in that starting unit. With Ayo and his development, I certainly feel optimistic that he can continue to improve on what he did last year, which, credit to him, I don't think he or anybody thought, I'm going to end up starting 40 games this year, my mm-hmm. rookie year as a second round pick. But because of injuries, that happened to be the case. And it was impressive to see how quickly he adapted to the speed at the NBA level. You know, as you mentioned, in the early going, it was like, okay, maybe a little bit of a half step too slow, but the game seemed to slow down for him pretty quickly. Yep. And I was impressed with his poise on an NBA court, especially in late game moments. He made a lot of big, smart plays down the stretch of close games that the Bulls went on to win. And then, you know, you mentioned the rookie wall. I think the other element to it was, I think Ayo caught a lot of opponents by surprise, caught him off guard. Yep. They weren't necessarily like their scouting homework people weren't focusing on like watching Ayo's, you know, Illini game tape or the summer league games or the first 10 games he played in the NBA coming off the bench and maybe getting 10 minutes. When he maybe faced a team for a second time or towards that back part of the season, when teams actually had a little bit more tape to see what Ayo's tendencies were, you saw him struggle a little bit. That's perfectly natural for a rookie. What I kept hearing, what everyone has kept hearing all offseason long, is that Ayo is having a quote-unquote monster offseason. The amount of work that he's put into his game and his body. He's, I think, can be an example of a young player in the NBA who can build a little bit of strength, whether that be to help his defensive game or to absorb contact and do more things offensively on that end of the floor without sacrificing any of his quickness, any of his athleticism. He said he's gained about 6 or 7 pounds of muscle in the offseason. You can tell by looking at him, like he looks bigger. So that being said, start, come off the bench. I honestly, whatever Billy looks at in training camp and thinks gives them the best chance to get off to a good start, right now I'm leaning towards Caruso because mm-hmm. all the different factors you talk about, Ayo and Alex Caruso are both like inconsistent but could knock down a shot kind of three-point shooters. Ayo has so much potential to be a quality defensive player, but he still makes some young player kind of mistakes on the defensive end. I mean, cut and dry, bare bones. Of their options to start at point guard, Alex Caruso is the best player right now. So start him. And then maybe make an adjustment throughout the season if you see different things, if you're Billy Donovan, to say, well, actually, you know, maybe having Caruso as a vet with that second unit is beneficial. Let Ayo run, you know, with the big boys in the starting unit. But then you also have Goran Dragic, who could be that veteran guard to lead that second unit. So the one thing that I'm fairly confident in is that we know who's going to be the closing five of this team. And it's not Io most nights. It's going to be Caruso,
yeah,
DeMar, Zach, Pat, and Vooch. That's your closing five. Everything that leads up to that is just how Billy Donovan sees the best opportunities and angles to get the most out of his rotation.
I would agree. And considering that, maybe it might make sense to start Io. So, because Caruso is used to getting his rhythm coming off the bench. And maybe, depending on what Billy Donovan sees in training camp, but, you know, so Io can like get his rhythm right from the start, and then Caruso comes in, he's used to it, he's excelled in it, so that works, that has worked in the past, and there's no reason to think that it might not work or will not work in the future. So maybe, I have no preference really.
Lonzo,
you can't really have one guy doing what Lonzo does, right? So you probably need several guys. So Caruso defensively,
that's the tricky thing about the decision, is that none of those guys can bring you everything that Lonzo brings you on both ends of the floor. I think it's unquestionable that Lonzo Ball is the best two-way player on this roster. And none of the guys who are your options to replace him as the team's starting point guard are going to bring you everything that Lonzo brings you. You're going to have to try to replace those things or gloss over those certain weaknesses one player and one possession at a time. If you're thinking that maybe starting Io to keep Caruso in that vet coming off the bench role is the good option out of the gate. I guess the biggest thing to think of optimistically is that Billy Donovan has these options. And we might see him tinker around with it through the first month or so of the season. He certainly, based on what we've heard out of practices over the last week, is that he's looked at a lot of different options and lineups as far as which five are running with which five in these practices and scrimmages. So I think Billy's trying to figure it out right now too.
Yeah, and yeah, rightfully so. And as you said before, it's a good thing that now he's got the time to do it and doesn't have to do it on the fly during the season with Lonzo just getting hurt. And so you've mentioned Dragic. So first of all, we've also talked about that it has been, especially compared to last year and the trade deadline before, a fairly quiet summer for the Bulls. And I just remember just like looking at my phone and waiting for a big thing to happen. Didn't happen. So how do you stand there? Are you okay with the approach of Kani Sovas and Evers Lee to say like continuity, as they said, just like look at the team? So we had a good first half last season, then like injuries hit. And so kind of we want to see how that group works together before we do make another big move. Or do you feel like, guys, we've seen there are holes on this team, why haven't we done more?
Yeah. I'd say I'm kind of somewhere in the middle as far as understanding and being frustrated by the offseason that they had, aside from being appreciative and impressed that they did just say, all right, Zach, here's this big fat $200+ million contract, sign it, stay here. And Zach immediately did so. That in itself deserves some credit. The front office for making sure that Zach felt supported, the front office for finally over the past season and a half, bringing in people who could help him win games and want to stay here. And then moving beyond that, the underwhelming part of the offseason, if you want to call it that, with these, you know, vet additions of Dragic and Drummond. Do each of them offer the Bulls better depth than their counterpoints last season? Yes. I think it's hard to argue otherwise. Is Andre Drummond an upgrade over Tony Bradley or an aging Tristan Thompson? Yes. Is Dragic an upgrade over, oh dear God, Matt Thomas or whoever else they would need to look to get deep, you know, backup guard minutes? Yes. Dragic has been in this league a long time. He's very smart. And I know he didn't have a great, you know, quarter of a season stint with the Nets last season and dealt with some health issues, but if he's healthy enough to play, Dragic for 15, 20 minutes a night off the bench is a solid piece to have at your disposal if you're Billy Donovan. So they may have been underwhelming moves. They may have been not sexy moves, or the big swing moves that some Bulls fans were hoping for, but they are moves that improve the talent on the roster. You can't debate that. It's a fact. So, you know, I try to remind myself of that to keep things in perspective. The other part of the perspective puzzle that I think a lot of Bulls fans glossed over when they, like you, were sitting at their phone the first few hours of free agency and saying, do something! What the hell? The Bulls front office pulled off the offseason of a lifetime in the summer of 2021. They orchestrate the sign and trade to get Lonzo Ball from New Orleans and basically give up nothing for him. You know, Garrett Temple and Satoransky and that's, you know, a second rounder or whatever. Yeah. That's basically just getting Lonzo to sign with you in free agency. Then they add Alex Caruso. And you're like, oh, heck yeah. I can't believe the Lakers didn't pay him to stick around. This team needs perimeter defense. That was one of this team's biggest flaws last season. In their first two moves, they've gone out and addressed perimeter defense with these two guys in Lonzo and Caruso. And you were feeling pretty good about those two moves. And then they're like, oh, by the way, we're also getting DeMar DeRozan. You were like, well, what? Holy shit. Pardon my language. Like, that was an offseason that this Bulls like organization has not had in a long time, if ever. Pulling off all of those moves, Bulls fans so quickly forgot that that happened. And then this summer, we're expecting, well, go get Rudy Gobert or find a way to get Kevin Durant on this team. And you're like, God, okay, what you're talking about doesn't exist in realistic terms of what front offices can and cannot accomplish. So there's no way they were having that kind of offseason 2 years in a row. It just wasn't feasible. It wasn't possible. So there's that perspective. But the one thing where they can be knocked, in my opinion, is, as you mentioned, as we discussed earlier, this team needed to address three-point shooting, and it did not. But and Billy Donovan was asked about it at Media Day and said, well, you know, I'm optimistic that we have good quality shooters on this team, and then just was naming guys who were here last year and are here again this year, and they're just hoping that they can get more volume out of certain guys. Like, hey, maybe Patrick Williams becomes a more confident three-point shooter and gets up more threes, because on a small sample size, he shot above 40% behind the three-point line through the first 2 years of his career. Or maybe it's Vooch bringing his percentage back up. Or maybe, you know, it's Caruso proving that he can be a three-point threat after dealing with that, the wrist that clearly knocked his shooting rhythm. Or maybe it's Goran Dragic being, you know, something along the lines of the 36% three-point shooter that he has been in his career, and not the 25% three-point shooter he was in his handful of games for Brooklyn last year. But those are all just cross your fingers and hope as far as this team improving in the three-point department. So if there's one thing you can knock them on, it's that. But I think by and large, Bulls fans were quickly ignoring a lot of perspective of what they did accomplish this offseason. And how much, oh my gosh, they accomplished the offseason before that.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned Patrick Williams. He hasn't really played last year. I mean, he's played the playoffs, but he definitely wasn't himself. So there is still, so he's basically like, he's not a new signing, but he's a guy coming back basically now, having a full, he even missed training camp last year with the ankle injury. So he's coming back and have a full training camp this year. And I mean, I think I agree, because I'm always of the opinion, okay, the guys in the front office and the coaches know and see a lot more than I do. So if they say we trust the guys we have, especially the younger guys, I kind of focus on the younger guys. I give them kind of very, very nice move by me, the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. but on the other hand, as you said, I mean, signing a real three-point threat would have been nice, and at the same time, like, getting a bit more, I don't know, athletic on the defensive end, you know, get one more versatile, maybe longer defender would have been nice. That's where the Drummond signing, with all the rebounding he's providing and the physicality he's providing, I always picture like another type of center big man to back up Vooch, you know, like a more athletic one, more a rim protector. Like, you know what I mean? So that was maybe that might have been my biggest like regret, quote unquote, for this summer.
Yeah. And the length thing that you just mentioned, I think, is key. Drummond will help them on the glass. And one of the things that Billy has talked about in training camp is maybe with Drummond arriving, trying to get more easy opportunities on the offensive glass, because the Bulls were one of the worst offensive rebounding teams in the league last year. They didn't make it a priority. What they prioritized was getting back in transition on defense. It sounds like maybe they're going to shift a little bit, at least, to see, all right, well, if we're not getting great fast break opportunities because Lonzo's out and we're not going to see that kind of generation of opportunities for fast break, let's try and get our easy buckets the other way, which is crashing the offensive glass and putting the ball back in the hoop. That logic is fine to me. But what Drummond doesn't give you, while he does give you that rebounding prowess on both ends, is elite rim protection. He's never really been that kind of center. And he doesn't give you the versatility or the athleticism of a big who maybe doesn't have the frame that Drummond has, but he has the quickness, the lateral quickness, and the size and length to guard up and guard centers and guard power forwards, but also guard competently on the perimeter. The Bulls really don't have anybody like that on their roster, except maybe one or maybe two, and it's Patrick Williams and Dalen Terry. And that's why I did like the Dalen Terry pick, because his length is something that the Bulls did not have. And I think if he sticks around long-term, he could be a great two-way player in this league, but especially an elite, versatile defensive player. The Bulls have a lot of guys who are like 6'5 or 6'6 and shorter, some of whom really don't bring you much on the defensive end. And then they have bigs like Vooch or like Drummond or last year like Thompson or Bradley. What they don't have a lot of is those guys who are like 6'7 to 6'9 or 6'10 who can guard in the interior and on the perimeter with their athleticism and their length. So that is another hole I think that this roster has. Did they have opportunities to go out and sign guys like that this summer? Apparently not, because I give them credit enough to know that they could have used another player or two like that on the roster, and they didn't. And they didn't add any.
If we see it, they might see it as well, right? So
yeah, one would think. If laymen like us are like, you know what, you could use some guys in that 6'6 to 6'10 range.
Size, you know? Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Length can guard multiple positions. You don't have any guys like that. Well, you got one, and he missed 80% of his second season.
And nobody really knows at this point what he's going to be. So since you mentioned him, how do you stand on Pat Williams?
Where I stand on Pat is I think the people who are confidently, aggressively, and even somewhat angrily labeling him a bust 2 seasons into his NBA career, when one of those 2 seasons he missed most of because of an injury in game 5 of 82, are misguided and downright pessimistic. And that's coming from someone who tends to be a bit more on the pessimism than optimism side when it comes to evaluating the NBA and my Bulls in particular. There is still so much room for improvement and growth in this young man's game. The thing that I really want to see from Pat this year, because as we just discussed of how badly the Bulls need it, is taking another step in embracing the role of, I'm going to guard the toughest or one of the toughest guys our opponents are throwing at us every night. Because he has, I believe, the physical tools to be that kind of defender in the NBA. I think a lot of Bulls fans are saying, year 2 to year 3, this is that year. We got to see Pat make that jump. And they're going to want to see Pat, you know, become this like 20 and 10 kind of player. Anyone expecting that where do you see Pat getting those shots from? Now, look, I do think that he should shoot more, but it's just a matter of when Pat in his first two seasons had a good open look and was hesitant to shoot it and either pass it off or hesitated and then had a tough shot instead of an open shot. That's a simple fix that can bump his scoring up a little bit. The big question about him offensively is, can he turn into a three-layer offensive threat and sometimes be one of those guys moving off the ball, making cuts off the ball, as Billy Donovan has talked about wanting in training camp, and get buckets that way? And can he also, at times, put the ball on the floor and either facilitate or get to the rack himself? Those are questions that we might not get the answer to this season, as much as Bulls fans want it. I do believe that he has the potential to turn into that kind of player on the offensive end. But if he is playing a good amount of his minutes in this starting unit, you got Zach, you got DeMar, you got Vooch. All three of those guys, at least, are ahead of Pat in who's getting shots. So I don't see some giant jump coming this season for Pat as far as volume of shooting. I just want him to take his opportunities where they're presented to him and to see him be confident in taking those opportunities when they come his way offensively. And most importantly, show us what you got. Show us that you have potential to be an all defensive team kind of guy on the other end of the floor. And if he shows us a sprinkling of improvement and growth of confidence offensively and a growth of competence, versatility, and elite potential defensively, I'll be happy.
I mean, since he's shown flashes of it in his rookie season, right? I mean, and even last season during the playoffs, even like the aggressiveness, the defense, it kind of is there. And I'm with you. I mean, last season, I don't really want to take it into consideration because it was so weird for him, you know, being out early with the ankle injury, new team. And he seems like a guy who doesn't really step on anybody's toes, kind of. So coming into a team with DeMar DeRozan, with Zach LaVine, with Vooch, and now he's coming in and he's not going to go for his shot. So your colleague Mark Kay had a few interesting videos on Twitter about him playing off the ball. He's not too high on Pat, is he? I mean,
he's not.
Yeah, but that was very constructive videos, how he could play off the ball, like being aggressive when he has the option to cut. And I think, probably that is what his role going to be. And I wouldn't label him as a bust now, like even next year. I just like hope, as you said, like a bit of growth, grow into his role. And then
I think, you know, something, and, you know, I saw those breakdowns that you were talking about from Mark, and like, Mark is a very smart basketball mind. I'm thrilled that he's part of our CHGO team. I've always admired his Bulls takes, and I've also appreciated that he oftentimes is even more of a cynical asshole than I am when it comes to talking about the Bulls. So it's like it makes sure that I'm not all the way at that end of the spectrum. But the thing about Mark, and it's not just him, I think a lot of Bulls fans are like, well, this is a number four overall pick, so why isn't he already a stud? And don't have the patience to realize that, okay, it doesn't necessarily matter where you're drafted, or maybe to some people it does and that's all they see. I try and look at the context as often as possible, whether it be analyzing Pat's first couple of years in the NBA or any player, that it's got to, yes, the player themselves have to take every opportunity and use it to grow and show your coach, your teammates, what you're capable of on an NBA floor. But there's only so much of that that's within Pat's control. Let's also remember, this is his first season coming in that actually getting to participate in training camp, speaking. And he didn't have summer league as a rookie because of the pandemic. And then coming into training camp year two, he comes into camp with a bad sprained ankle and misses out on that. This is the first time he's had a fully healthy, fully normal offseason leading into training camp. And, you know, he was asked to do what he was asked to do. And not a lot of that was showcase your offensive potential through the first 2 years of the NBA, his NBA career. It's not like that's bad. It's just that he needs to pay his dues a little bit on when he is going to be that guy that the Bulls look to create offensively and grow his offensive game. I don't care that he was a number four overall pick right now. I certainly am holding out optimism that he can become the player that clearly AK and Eversley saw when they were analyzing that draft class, because I see it too. They wouldn't have drafted him with the fourth overall pick if they didn't believe in his potential. But not every top five or top 10, you know, NBA lottery pick turns into a star at 19 or 20 or 21, the way that Luka Doncic did or some of the other young, you know, phenoms have done. Some guys, it takes time because of the context of their situation, or in Pat's case, injuries or this or that. It doesn't mean that they're a bust by any means.
You can't look at his situation without considering the way that's been leading up there. So as you say, I totally agree. We have to wrap up soon. There's one guy, we've mentioned him a few times, and he's the other one I think Bulls fans are not too sure about, you know, probably know who I'm talking about.
Mooch?
Yeah.
Go figure.
So do you think that, especially last season, there's been too much focus on him as a floor spacer from fans, but also during the games? Because he is a decent 3-point shooter, even though his percentage went down last year. But
so too much focus, maybe a little bit. And maybe it's not fair to Vooch that I'm coming into this season thinking Vooch is so underappreciated in a lot of what he does offensively, especially his passing. People have been marveling at, you know, Joker over in Denver in these MVP seasons with, wow, look at a big man making those kinds of passes. And Vooch isn't quite to that level of Nikola Jokic in the way that he passes as a big man and gets open looks for his teammates. But I don't think the gap is that wide. If you're talking about the best skilled passing big men in the NBA, Vooch is on my top five of that list for sure. He's so underappreciated in the way that from that sort of high post area on the floor, he's sort of been a fulcrum for the Bulls offense, an outlet, a valve to switch from the strong side to the weak side of the court, to find guys making cuts or to find those precision pinpoint passes to corner shooters. He doesn't get nearly enough credit for that. I think the frustrating thing with him last season is that for whatever reason, and maybe it was, as he himself has said, just trying to find my role in a much different environment. In Orlando, for all those years, he was leading their offense, and now he's trying to fit in with Zach and DeMar, two guys who need the ball and score a lot. Because of that, it seemed like he couldn't even get a rhythm around the basket. And that's what you always talk about with big men, right? Especially big men who also have added floor spacing as an element to their offensive, toolkit, is get your looks inside early. Get them going in the post early, and then step outside. And once you're in a rhythm, start taking those outside shots. For whatever reason, for the first couple months of the season, it seemed like Vooch was just he had the yips or something. He was missing bunnies around the rim. So then, of course, he's not going to have the confidence to step out and make his 3-point shots, because he's saying, what the heck? There's a lid on the basket when I'm trying my hooks or my up and under moves around the rim. It was really frustrating to watch. I didn't necessarily fault him for it. It was just frustrating, as I'm sure it was for him too. I would agree with you that too much emphasis is being put on Vooch as a floor spacer, were it not for what we discussed earlier, which is this team desperately needs 3-point shooting from somewhere. They need it more somewhere. And Vooch has got to get up shots from behind the arc this season. And they can, use that Vooch high screen in a lot of different ways. And sometimes it'll be a pick and pop action, and sometimes it'll be something else. But he has got to take open shots behind the arc when they're there. And Bulls fans have to hope that he hits it a better clip than he did last year.
It may very well happen. I mean, as you say, once his short hooks start falling, he gets more confident in the shot. And then, yeah, it's Like Vooch is a really back and forth with Ole than me. Because I was like, yeah, nah, he's gonna be all right. He's gonna be all right. And then he's like, yeah, but you know, the picks, Franz Wagner, obviously, the Bulls could have picked. It was really nice. But yeah. I hope it's gonna get better this year. And I haven't written him off. I haven't written him off. Not at all. Yeah. So
well, and look, I mean, you can't argue against the fact that Vooch had a tough year last year.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah.
Even still in a tough year, in a down year, in a year when his 3-point percentage plummeted, he was still what, an 18-11 player? Like 18-11 and like 4 or 5 assists on some nights as a big man. And Bulls fans are like, oh man, never should have traded Wendell for that. Wendell averaged similar numbers on the worst team in the league. Like I do not understand Bulls fans who bicker about that. And when you look at some of the other all-star caliber players who have gotten traded in the last year or two, 2 picks and Wendell, it was not some ridiculous price tag for Vooch. It wasn't. Yep. He was an all-star big man in his prime who offered this team things that it needed that at the time Wendell did not. And clearly the new front office did not see Wendell as such an untouchable piece of what they were building that they couldn't let him go in such a trade. And I still, based on the entire, you know, work evidence of what they have done in 2 years on the job, am leaning with trusting them as opposed to doubting them.
Same with me, especially since Wendell also looked like he might have the yips in Chicago and he kind of found his groove back in Orlando. So I think, yeah, it's for me, it's still all right. I hope he's got a bounce back year this year, Vooch. And so maybe, Jeff, time for 2 more short questions, really short questions.
Sure, sure.
So after all we've been talking about, where do you see the Bulls? Like the Hawks have gotten better. That's a big conversation. The Cavs have gotten considerably better with Mitchell. Even the Pistons got better. So where do you feel like, or where do you feel the Bulls could end up in the Eastern Conference?
All right, this is the part where if any Bulls optimists are listening, I crush them. I'm just being a realist right now. I think a lot of other teams in the East improved their roster more than the Bulls did this offseason. I think most people would agree with that. I have Milwaukee, Boston, Philly somewhere top 3. I don't know what order they will, you know, be in that top 3, but those are my top 3. Then from like 4 to 8, you have Miami, Brooklyn, Chicago, Cleveland, Atlanta, Toronto.
Yep.
Of that group of teams, I the one team that I am not maybe as high on that other people were this offseason with their big moves is the Hawks. And look, I really like DeJounte Murray. I've always been a DeJounte Murray fan. Do I believe that that was enough to go, you know, make the Hawks be a play-in team to like, oh, we're going to be fighting to get our way into the top 4? I got to see it before I believe it. Cleveland getting Donovan Mitchell was really frustrating to watch as a Bulls fan. You thought, well, he'll go to New York, but even if he goes to New York, New York's not a threat because the Knicks can never get their shit together and it'll be a shit show of one way or another. The fact that he's adding that, you know, joining that Cleveland team, I've always been a big Darius Garland guy, loved what he did last year, and holy geez, I am terrified of the Twin Towers they have over there with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Mobley looks like an absolute stud. Yeah. And Toronto is going to be really good. They don't have necessarily any big of the flashiest names of Eastern Conference star players, but you know they have Siakam, who is a legit stud star player. Van Vliet's really good. Gary Trent Jr., freaking Scotty Barr. Like they got a good squad in Toronto. There are no easy wins this year other than maybe, like, I don't know, Orlando again. Even Detroit made a move to add talent. Yeah. Detroit's rebuilding, and they were like, no, we're getting Bogdanovich over here.
Yeah.
They've
got
like,
Cade, who's pretty good.
Yeah, Cade. He's going to probably make another nice jump this year. So, long story short, Would I be surprised to see the Bulls end up somewhere in that 7-8-9 play-in? No. It's still possible that things break right for them, as in they have a roster that stays mostly healthy this season, outside of knowing that they're going to be without Lonzo for the first half. And maybe some other teams get hit by the injury bug worse than worse than they did last year. The Bulls were one of the teams, and Billy Donovan pointed this out, that had the most missed games from their top seven players across the league last year. Maybe it's a different story this year, and it works in the Bulls' favor. But it's possible that they can maybe get that fifth or sixth seed as they did last year to avoid the play-in again. I see it more likely that they end up kind of 7 or 8 and kind of around somewhere between 41 and 44 wins.
I won't start an argument about this with you. So I think I'm there as well. Maybe there's a leap from Pat and Ayo and things look different. We can't predict that now, but yeah, as the other teams are just good. So they're just really, really good. So maybe it's going to be the play. And maybe there's a move during the season, maybe the defense. I mean, that's the thing with Vooch at defensive Rose, Rose. So maybe he's get his groove. I don't know. Playing seems reasonable at the moment, doesn't it?
So it does. I'd say that top four making that kind of jump is damn near impossible. And if they manage to avoid the play-in again this year and get the fifth or the sixth seed, they might not look at that as a win, but I would look at that as them meeting my expectations, because my expectations right now are they're going to have to fight like hell to avoid the play-in.
Yeah, same with me. So let's try to end on a bit of a lighter note. So all of the teams, many teams have brought out their classic edition jerseys this year. So the Utah brought the jerseys back that they lost against MJ with. The Wizards brought back the actual MJ jerseys.
And doesn't Lauri Markkanen just look so at home and like himself in a vintage Jazz jersey? Yeah. I mean, that's a classic Jazz guy right there, Lauri Markkanen.
Yeah, true. Especially those 90s guys. Greg Foster, comes to mind.
Yeah,
but how come the Bulls just stay away from that red pinstripe? How? Have you any insights?
I don't, man. If you can see behind me, that's an MJ late 90s black with red pinstripes. It's hard to make out the pinstripes from, my camera. But that to me is one of the dopest jerseys the Bulls have ever made. I still appreciate the fact that they have not messed with the classic of their home whites and their road reds, the simple Bulls logo across the chest. Or not Bulls logo, but just the word Bulls. It is one of the most iconic, recognizable sport logos on the planet. Don't mess with a good thing. And I've liked some of their City Edition jerseys more so than others. I honestly really did like the ones that they brought out last year that were a throwback to the old, script jerseys of the 80s in Chicago. I have a DeMar DeRozan and a Zach LaVine jersey in that City Edition jersey from last year because I thought they were so clean. There were also some hints and nods to certain 70s jerseys on those as well that I thought was really cool. But maybe they just don't care, because if they were listening at all, they would know that we have been screaming out as a fan base, bring back the black with the red pinstripes, and they refuse. Yeah. They even gave us that statement edition jersey a couple years ago that's black and has pinstripes, but they're like silver and you can barely tell that they're there. And it's like, no, you were so close. You were so close.
Yeah, the right idea.
Give us that idea. I don't know, man, Max. It's driven me crazy for years as they've been, releasing these new City Edition jerseys and statement jerseys. Bring this back. It's not that hard. You already have the template somewhere in one of your filing cabinets. Just bring this back.
Yes, but when they released the other jerseys, I was just scrolling through because I was okay. Now it's time. Every franchise bring back its 90s jerseys. No chance. Can't believe it.
Maybe they know that the Bulls' record in these black red pinstripe alternate road jerseys was actually very poor compared to the general success and winning percentage of those 90s teams. For whatever reason, they did not play well when they wore those black and red pinstripe jerseys. Yeah. So maybe that's why they're avoiding it.
Well, maybe this it would be the other way around, you know? So history reversed. Just give it a go. They're too beautiful not to give it a shot. I mean, yeah. Maybe it's got to happen someday. Maybe for the Paris game, you know? Maybe that's their special treat.
I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Yeah, me neither. So, but now let's just look forward to the season, look forward to preseason opening night tonight. You're watching, you're going, you're
so our guy Will Gottlieb will be at the United Center reporting tonight. So we will certainly hear from him. He'll check in from the UC as part of our post-game show after the game concludes tonight. My guy Big Dave and I will be at our CHGO studios downtown Chicago, actually in the West Loop, just like a few blocks down the street from the United Center. So we will be watching the game there, nice. And we'll be doing pregame and postgame, bookending the basketball action tonight. So we're really looking forward to it.
Sounds good. So enjoy. Thank you so much for coming on. Was fun, as I can say always now, since we've done it twice. and yeah, guys, just listen to the CHGO Bulls podcast with Matt, Big Dave Watson, Will Gottlieb. Follow Matt on @Bulls_pack. At @CHGO_Bulls. Follow the guys. It's great fun listening to them, giving their Bulls takes. They've got a podcast every day and lots of interesting stuff. So, Matt, thanks again and enjoy preseason start.
Thanks so much for having me, Max. Always a pleasure to chat. And let's enjoy some hoops, shall we? We are there. Let's we made it. It. So we many months it. Of basketball ahead.
Finally. Take care, mate.
Yeah, you too.